Welcome to I Do, I Sue, a family law podcast with Timothy Nichols and Gillian Yeend.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, Gil. How are you?
Good, thanks. It's nice to see you this afternoon.
It's great to see you. Really, always good to see you. You're a hotspot now back again in Newcastle, so we still can't see each other.
Yeah, I know.
It's only electronically.
I know. We're so vexed with this COVID thing. But
I know.
Luckily, we're healthy and happy, so that's fine.
Yeah.
But before we start today, I just want to say at the outset, well done you on becoming an accredited specialist
in
family law.
Thank you.
It's a pretty special achievement. How do you feel?
I feel lots of emotions about it. It was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Yeah.
And to get through the assessment process and then pass, it was just, I'm elated, I'm relieved, I'm just, yeah, over the moon.
It's a really big task to kind of take on when you're working full time, especially with all the lockdown arrangements and things that have been happening. So I obviously got to observe you go through it. I think you put a lot of effort in, but it seemed pretty grueling.
Oh, it was grueling. I kept a pretty structured study schedule. So 4 hours a night I was doing through the process and the lead up to the process. And then I wasn't going out on the weekends. I was studying all weekend. I applied myself wholeheartedly to it.
And that, I mean, I feel like COVID probably assisted you in that regard, because that would have been a harder task.
Oh, God, could you imagine?
Yeah.
It's insane. And then, but you think about all of the other people that sat this round of accreditation with me. Imagine, like, as you know, I don't have children. So imagine homeschooling and trying to manage all of those aspects of your life as well as doing accreditation. That would have been quite the undertaking.
Oh, yeah, super challenging. But, you know, so well done everyone who, I mean, even just sat the process, because I know, you know, lots of people don't pass. So it can be, you know, a big effort, and then for, you know, the lack of the return that you're hoping for. But I think just going through the exercise, updating your skill set, has its own benefits, I guess.
Oh, I agree. It was really fantastic, because I think that's the thing about being an accredited specialist, is there is an expectation not only that you are extremely capable as a family law practitioner, but your knowledge extends into all the, you know, the little pockets and all of the nitty-gritty and all of the, there's no stone left unturned in terms of your awareness and ability to identify issues and know what's going on in really complex family law matters. It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, I remember, like, I mean, I set my accreditation back in 2013, so it was a while ago.
Well, not that long ago. Calm down.
Yeah, I remember they send you out in advance of the process these massive lists of assumed knowledge, and you read through it and think, oh, assumed knowledge.
It's true.
Study. And I just remember, you know, having to put together voluminous notes, you know, to go through all these issues. And I mean, it's not just even the basic family law stuff. There are like weird areas that intersect with family law, like, you know, your Hague Convention matters and, you know, state and territory based family violence arrangements.
Wills and estates. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, from a purely selfish perspective, one of the other really good things about you going through this process is you've done really updated notes now, so our team gets the benefit of brand fresh new notes. And I think they're about 380 pages long. They're pretty detailed, so thanks.
Oh, it's my pleasure. If you can get something out of them, I'll share them around. If you know me, open book.
So just in terms of this, because you've gone through the most recent assessment process, so tell me, what are the current requirements for becoming an accredited specialist or applying?
Well, what I thought was actually quite interesting before I get into that is that less than 5% of lawyers are accredited specialists. I was baffled by that. It shows like how rigorous the process is and what they've done with it. Like, it's a crazy statistic, don't you think?
Well, that's quite interesting, I think, in our jurisdiction, because I feel like if you're doing a lot of family law work or, you know, working in a family law firm, it's kind of a rite of passage and expected that you sit your accreditation at some point. So it does surprise me that those numbers are so few, but I don't think they offer accreditation in everything. It's just area, you know, there's this kind of expectation that you get to a point and you take that next step.
But there's a criteria though. So it's not like you can be admitted and the next day you can approach the Law Society and say, I want to sit for specialist accreditation. There's actually quite a few things that you have to satisfy to even, you know, be able to, it's like a, before the door opens, you have to have a key to unlock the door. And the first thing is that you need to hold a current solicitor's practicing certificate. So you need to be currently practicing. You also need to be a current solicitor member of the Law Society of New South Wales, which is where both you and I did our accreditation through.
Yeah, I think other jurisdictions have their own accreditation as
That's
well.
That's right. Yeah, there's different criteria. And then as well, you must have been, so you must be engaged in the practice of law on a full-time basis for at least 5 years. In the each of the 3 years immediately preceding your application to sit for accreditation, you must have been engaged in the area of law, which for us is family law, in which the accreditation is sought. Mm. And in each of those 3 years, you must have practiced in that area for not less than 25% of your full-time practice. Yeah. So it's quite, like, there are a few things you have to kind of be doing it to be able to even get to the point where you can sit for accreditation.
Well, I feel like, you know, the content that's involved is pretty voluminous. So if you're not doing a lot of that work, I mean, that would be a massive undertaking.
It's a huge undertaking for lawyers like us that practice family law day in, day out. Like, I just think, you know, and I think this shocks quite a few people, is that when you talk about family law, you know, the perception is that we just do divorces and we just do, you know, quite simple transactional work, but it could not be farther from the truth.
Yeah, it's pretty discretionary. So, I mean, once you become an accredited specialist, what's the kind of expectation in terms of ongoing requirements?
So lawyers usually have to do 10 hours per year of continuing professional development. So that's like going to, you know, conferences and there are specific things, like you've got to do ethics, I think, and other different aspects as part of your annual CPD requirements. But for us as accredited specialists, we have to do 20 hours. So we've got to, you know, really stay on top of everything that's going on, keep up to date, all of those things.
Well, I guess the good thing about that is family lawyers tend to like socializing and going to conferences. So it's a good excuse to say to your employer, hey, sorry, I've got to go to that, you know, 3-day conference in the South Australian vineyards because, you know, I've got all these points that I need to get. I feel like it's...
How topical. So we can just, you know, shout out to our employers. There's a conference in March next year that we really want to go to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, see you in Adelaide next year, Tim.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. But look, learning's fun, right? So I feel like it's not a big stretch to kind of do those additional CPD points because stuff changes really quickly. So I kind of like that we have to force ourselves to do that extra education.
Well, I think that a little known fact about you and I that people probably don't know is that you and I are actually really big nerds.
I don't know about that. Family law nerds?
We are family law nerds. Like, we enjoy reading cases and talking about authorities and talking about strategy in our cases and going through that process and actually, you know, forensically engaging with the law and what we're doing. You and I thrive off that.
Can I say, does that mean we're nerds or does it mean we need a life outside of our employment? I don't know what the distinction is there, but anyway.
Look, I just think it's part and parcel. We enjoy it. Like, it's not an imposition that we have to do so much extra CPD.
Yeah, it's good. So perhaps we should go through, for the purposes of this podcast today, what the actual assessment processes are, and have a chat about our experiences. So What's number one, Tim?
Well, the assessment for me this year, well, the assessment period went from June to October or July to October.
Yeah.
And so there were three aspects to the assessment which I had to do. The first one was I had to do a mock file. So I got given a scenario with a set of facts, and then I was asked to prepare a letter of advice based on that. And also I had to prepare court documents to commence an application. So commence proceedings, sorry. So the process that I had to go through with that was quite arduous, and it was really complex.
Was the scenario the most like outrageous family law scenario you could have?
Who are these people, these tortured people who just had every issue under the sun? Yeah. You know, it was, you know, this, what is it? Every saying, and the kitchen sink. It was all in there. Yeah.
Lots of red herrings.
There were so many red herrings, so many red herrings.
I love it.
But it was good. It was actually, I really enjoyed it.
Did you have to do a portfolio as well as part of that?
No, I didn't. What's the portfolio? Really?
Yeah, so when I did it, you did your mock file. So, you know, it was kind of same with what you're explaining. But in addition to that, you had to provide a portfolio of recent work redacted, obviously, with clients' details. And, you know, I remember, if I can turn my mind back to the olden days, that we had to do
olden
like...
Olden days, 2013.
Yeah, I know, it feels like the olden days. We had to do like a financial agreement, an application, financial statement, maybe some consent orders had to be in your portfolio, and an affidavit, so they could kind of check that you were drafting well. So back at that time, I remember... You know, after I sat it, for anyone who asked me what it was like, I used to say to people, just make sure that in the lead up to doing your accreditation, your work's like on point, so that your portfolio is ready and you're not going through and going, oh my God, where's the good documents? Because, I mean, in all reality, our documents should be excellent all the time. And that's obviously what we do at Triplets. But it doesn't sound like they've got that bit anymore, which is kind of great.
Yeah, no, I didn't have to do any of that. That's news to me.
Okay, all right. And then obviously there's the exam. So how did you go?
Wow, the exam. It was a three-hour exam, and it was done online. So I did it from home, and they record you through magic software that does it. So, and you know how technologically illiterate I am. So they would just you press a button that does it, you do it. And then it was hard. The exam was hard.
Yeah.
The volume of it. So we had some scenarios that were given to us in a series of questions asked in relation to those scenarios.
Okay.
And then some short answer questions. The short answer questions were, I think, expected. There were things on, you know, the latest and greatest cases, the upcoming court merger, because I sat the exam prior to the 1st of September, so we spoke about what that was. There were things there that come up in practice, I think, if you're doing it regularly. So there were things like nullity and like different aspects to, you know, stuff that's rare, but you see if you're in it. And I think the most troubling thing for me was the long answer question. So the scenarios and going through that was really difficult.
Yeah. Well, when I did my exam, and obviously this is well pre-COVID times, like we did it in person, and it was an open book exam. Like you got to take in your notes and you'd see around like who was bringing in like the, you know, Santa sack full of notes. But like my biggest anxiety around that was you couldn't type your answers. You had to handwrite them. And I mean, you've seen my handwriting. I had to be on my best behavior. Like it had been ages since I'd done an exam, but luckily I think the answers are all, you know, kind of designed to be, you know, put down big concepts, big principles, you know, like cases that are important and so forth, rather than super wordy answers.
Well, that was it in the exam. They said, so the names of the poor people that were the named clients in the different scenarios, we could just write the first initial of whatever their name was, and we could abbreviate in certain ways. Husband and wife, you could write H or W to make it as quick and easy as possible.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, the other big takeaway I remember from it was you know, if there'd been a big change in the law leading up to your exam, just to be across that, because I mean, obviously, you know, stuff changes in our jurisdiction all the time. And I remember before I sat my exam, at the end of the year before, they'd had the amendments to the family violence provisions. So, you know, the big changes about in the primary considerations.
That's right. 2012 was a big year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really important to be across that. And you think, like, you know, I always look back and think, wouldn't it have been crap to sit the exam after like the superannuation legislation changes or something? Like, you know, you kind of want to pick your year for when big changes happen. And if they're really hard and like curly ones, maybe wait for a while.
Well, that was in my mind. I thought if I fail this year, I would sit again next year, but then I have hundreds of pages worth of new court rules to learn back to front, inside and out and all of that stuff. Because I think that's the thing with accreditation is you have to be intimately acquainted with the material.
Yeah. I don't want to shock you, Tim, but you actually are meant to learn those new rules. I know. They are kind of fundamental to our day-to-day work.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, sitting in exam about them, though, it's wildly different, I think, to actually having to engage with it in practice.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I had to do my exam on a weekend. Did you do it on a weekend as well?
Yeah, mine was on a Saturday.
Yeah. And I remember like then the third part is you have to do your interview and, you know, word on the street before we did it was people were freaking each other out going that's the thing people fail. So you think, oh, that sounds scary. We interview clients every day. Why is it so hard in this scenario?
Yeah.
And I remember some people had to sit it straight after the exam that afternoon and others got to do it the next day, which I did. So I had to do it on the Sunday. And, like, I don't know what's better, like, doing it straight away or not, but how did your interview go? Like, you obviously had to do it, like, online?
It was online. It was via Zoom.
Okay.
The lady that I had was lovely. She was really, really nice. There were questions and red herrings all the way through it. So some of them were legitimate, like, things that a client would normally ask. Some of it was, you know, just ridiculous. Like, and it was kind of like, I wondered whether that there were strategies to put you off or to kind of direct where you were going or see what you were going to see. But it was, I actually enjoyed the interview most out of it. It was probably the most stressful because instead of the exam, you've got time to kind of work through the mock file, you've got time to work through, but for the client interview, you're being recorded and somebody else is assessing you after you do it. And it's all on the spot. So you have to, you know, be quick to, you know, whatever your answer is, it sticks.
My worst part about the interview was in the lead up to it. Like, because I quite enjoyed it as well. When I did our interview, again, the year before they'd had the High Court decision in the Italian girls case. So
there
when
you
we
go.
Did the interview, like, you know, it was about this couple who were dealing with, you know, issues between Italy and Australia and, like, you know, pretty similar scenarios. So that was good, like nice big red lights to tell us what we should be answering.
Absolutely.
But, like, because, again, it was in person and at the time I was living in Canberra and, like, it was held in Sydney, so I went to stay with my parents. But in my rush, I'd forgotten to take a suit with me. And again, reading the notes, it's like, please come in a suit in business attire. And like the next morning, I was just like, how did I forget? Like, it's like going, how do you turn up to court without a suit on? And so I had to like borrow a suit from my mum and kind of fashion it. And I just remember getting there thinking everyone will know, like, I'm in my mum's suit. But, yeah, it was fine. Like, obviously no one knew that. But, yeah, I was off my game. But, yeah, if they do hold them in person in the future and anyone listens to this, remember to take appropriate clothing.
Well, I can tell you now, and I hope this makes you feel better. So because mine was recorded, I had my shirt, tie and jacket on and my pajamas underneath. So
you know they can still take your accreditation off you for such. but I mean, look, the wonders of technology now and like just seeing us halfway up, I feel like I couldn't have turned up in that kind of attire to the in-person one, or I probably wouldn't have, you know, gotten through. But anyway,
oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, that's interesting. And look, I didn't find that to be the worst part of it. I actually thought the interview was pretty, you know, it was a fun experience. It was a good thing to do.
Well, mine was about non-disclosure.
Okay.
And it was almost like one of the questions was, I've got this secret bank account that I've got money squirreled away in. Do I have to disclose it? And I wonder which lawyers said no.
The ones that didn't pass. No, that's right. Mind. Like, you know, but yeah, I mean, yeah, great scenario. Fun and spicy scenario.
Fun and spicy. Black and Kellner, we're off we go.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, what are your takeaways or tips? If someone said, look, I'm thinking of doing accreditation, what would you, like, I mean, for example, someone in our team that we're going to force to do accreditation when they can, what would you tell them to do?
I would say that, so you referred to it before, that the Law Society releases the list of topics that are expected to be known by someone sitting for specialist accreditation. So that, yeah, what you were talking about is, it's the guide to assessment that they release each year, but it doesn't really change year on year, save for updated cases or things on stuff that you see in practice anyway.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people to kind of get acquainted with that and to know what the parameters of assessment are, because it is broad. And I think, you know, in the mock file and in the exam, there were questions about spouse maintenance, there were questions about property settlements with curly issues. Things that if you're engaging with those topics and start preparing notes and reading and investigating, it'll set you up for success.
Yeah, I mean, good tips. And obviously, you know, be kind of time, you know, conscious in doing it. Like, I feel like, again, because people are doing this on top of their, you know, day-to-day work experience, like especially with things like the mock file and stuff, making sure you leave yourself enough time to be able to do it. Because it seems easy in theory. You think, you know, you've got to put together some court documents and do a letter of advice. And these are things that we do pretty quickly in practice. But there's that weird kind of tension where it's not a real client. They're like scenarios in black and white on paper.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, it's harder to kind of, you know, tease out all the issues, especially because, like, every issue is in those files, so, yeah.
It's true. And I just think, you know, staying engaged with what we're doing, you know, like you and I send cases to each other that we see that we think are valuable or we should read, you know, I think.
And I read every case that you send me, like, every time, like, immediately.
But it's about engaging with your colleagues and, you know, being interested in the law. And I think if you're sitting for specialist accreditation in family law, you know, you should have an interest in what's going on and thinking about and talking to your friends about it and nerding out and supporting each other with, you know, different bits of information, what's going on, you know, the full court's given us a decision on this, what's that about, you know, things like that are really, really helpful.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Yeah. Well, look, I'm really proud of you. Like,
thanks, Gil.
Yeah. and it's exciting. And yeah,
I'm grateful to all your help and support through it as well. Cause you saw how stressed I got, how, you know, it's definitely a battle of highs and lows doing that process. And I think as well as practitioners, you said it before, and I think is absolutely true, is that in family law, I think, you know, it is a rite of passage to become an accredited specialist. There is an expectation that you will do that at some point. And you were very supportive to me and very, very helpful in terms of calming my nerves, talking me through, you know, it's just this, it's just that, like, you know, in terms of what I need to do or study or think about and cases and so on. And I really appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, I mean, the reality is you're pretty much a high maintenance colleague at most times. it was just kind of the same, but in a different flavor.
That's right. So, that's right.
Yeah. But no, you really did put mammoth amounts of effort in. So, I mean,
and it's we have one more thing in common now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're both accredited specialists.
Yeah. Well done. All right. Well, look, I'll talk to you soon, but thanks.
Can't
for the
wait.
Chat.
Thank you.
Bye, Tim.
Bye.
You've been listening to I Do, I Sue, a family law podcast with Timothy Nichols and Gillian Yeend. To find out more about your hosts and what they do, visit chamberlains.com.au. And now, here's the bit the boss insisted we say. The information in this podcast is for general educational purposes only. None of the content should be considered legal advice. Please don't make decisions based on the information in this podcast without seeking professional legal advice of your own. For more information, visit chamberlains.com.au.